my application for writ of certiorari, as I set out, was that we believe that the way the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and judgment of the trial court presented grievous, erroneous factual findings and patently wrong conclusions of law applied to those findings. The immediate court of appeals basically rubber-stamped what the lower court did. In dealing with the case, just a very brief background, because most of these facts that I'm recite have been laid out in my opening brief. They were summarized in the application for writ of certiorari. But basically, this is a case that arises from a teacher of our children in public schools being treated very badly by the Department of Education, the principal of her school, a co-teacher of her school. Not just badly, but in violation of the contract between the Department of Education and the teachers through the collective bargaining contract between the HSTA and the state of Hawaii. Ms. Stuckey is a teacher who has both a BA and a master's in music education, has Hawaii certification to teach music in grades K through 12. She came to Yau School on the island of Maui in 1987 after having 14 years of teaching experience on the mainland. She was recruited by Dr. Eisen, one of the main defendants in the case, her principal, to develop a music program with an emphasis on vocal music. The year prior to Ms. Stuckey's having been hired, Noel Kariah, who is also a defendant in this action, named in his official capacity, had been hired to be the band teacher at Yale School. Roughly, they were of the same age. Mr. Kariah apparently developed an idea about how he wanted a band program to go, what he referred to as his band program. And what he decided early on is that he wanted somebody to come in and be his assistant in the role of like a student assistant, somebody that would be submissive to him.
Ms. Johnston, yes, excuse me.
Justice Cobb.
I'm not sure who makes the argument, but is your client and the other people involved in the same age category?
They all fall within the protected age group of 40 or older, but as I believe I pointed out, that doesn't make any difference as far as whether or not discrimination has been engaged in a retaliation. The case I cite, I think it's the Nicholas versus Azteca restaurant in my opening brief, plus another case that was cited, actually I think in the Burlington case, Oncala versus Sundowner, which were cases of where there was sexual discrimination, where the plaintiff in both cases was a male and the complaint was sexual harassment by males. They said the fact that it was the same sex didn't take away the possibility that the prohibited acts had occurred. In this case, the fact that these people were all in the same age group.
What are you contending constitutes the discrimination with respect to age?
Okay.
What specific act?
Okay, this is where I was going. The concept was by Mr. Karai of his band, and was supported by the principal, is that there would be, they called it team teaching, but it wasn't really, it was him having an assistant. Somebody with the characteristics of a younger person, whether or not the person was actually younger, and that is submissive. This was testified to by Mr. Karai, admitted yes. The person they eventually brought in, Ms. Kaneshiro, who's a few years younger than my client, Ms. Stuckey, had those aspects. She got along better with the kids. She got along better with the parents. She was more youthful. And it's the perception of the characteristic rather than the actual characteristic. In this case, the effort was made by the principal, Dr. Eisen, to get that younger person or younger seeming person into the second music line, the second teaching position to assist Mr. Kariah. It started as early as 93 when there was a third teacher hired, a Bill Schaefer, who was younger, considerably younger. He assisted Mr. Karaya in teaching of the band. In 93, Ms. Stuckey was informed by Principal Eisen that her job was going to be cut. You got to go find another place. We're going to keep Mr. Schaefer. She filed a grievance saying, no, I have more seniority. I'm under the contract. I'm entitled to that position. That situation resolved because Mr. Schaefer took a position in another school.
Let me just ask you.
Yeah.
That's not in the findings. Was that submitted at trial?
Yes. My proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, which are contained at the record, pages 2312 through 2351, are extensive as far as the proposed findings of fact conclusions of law. I will say that virtually no finding that was presented by me in the proposed findings of fact conclusions of law was adopted by the court as though these 25 pages didn't exist. I point out again in my opening brief that these findings, they just weren't there. There was nothing found on behalf of my client. I'll point out that this trial was for me unusual because there was no contradictory evidence. There are no determinations made based on the credibility of witnesses. The testimony was uncontroverted. There was no issues about introduction of evidence. So what we have is a case that was basically stipulated on the facts.
So am I correct then, Ms. Johnston, that the gist of your appeal is that various of the circuit court's findings of fact were clearly erroneous, and various of the circuit court's conclusions of law were wrong, and therefore judgment should have been entered in favor of your client?
I would say it this way. I think that basically it was interesting going back and looking at this after, you know, 3 years of the briefs, that the court cites law that it should apply this case, but doesn't apply in any. I can see not a single place where the trial judge had applied the law correctly. It was in front of him, didn't apply it. The findings were so skimpy that I don't know if I can say that they're erroneous. It was erroneous that he didn't make findings that actually comported with the evidence. The key findings made by the trial judge were that the decision was made to take the actions against Ms. Stuckey, both in our claim for discrimination and the claim for retaliation.
So, excuse me,
based on
your claim for discrimination is that they hired a younger person and replaced her with, replace your client with her.
Is yes, but they denied, in the terms and conditions of my client's employment, she should have been given a full music line to teach in the 1998-1999 school year. Instead, they gave it to a younger appearing person, a more submissive person. And on top of that, they did it in violation of the contract. And this is one of the things that's very troubling about this case and the way it came down. I argued below on the age discrimination claim, not the retaliation claim, that the holding in Reeves versus Sanderson Plumbing, which is an age discrimination case, that applied the McDonnell-Douglas shifting of the prima facie case has to be made by the plaintiff. The employer comes back with a defense, and then the plaintiff can prove that it's pretextual. And my argument on that was that and the judge concluded that my client had made the prima facie test. The reason that they gave for why they did what they did, and not correctly putting Ms. Stuckey into the position that they put the younger teacher that had less seniority, was that her attitude was better and she got along better with people. And that is one of the findings. My argument was on the rebuttal to that is that finding had already been adjudicated that they couldn't do that under the contract. In other words, under the Reeves versus Sanderson Plumbing, if they have no reason that's a valid reason, or if the reason is shown to be false, the trial court could have found age discrimination in the absence of any valid reason. And they had no, and my argument is they had no reason. Once they said that they could do this because this person was had a better attitude, and that's what the finding is. Okay. And the arbitrator said, no, you can't do that.
Counsel, the findings indicate that the teaching methods of Mr. Raya and Ms. Stuckey clash, right?
That was one of the findings the court made.
And the approach and the beliefs and the views clash.
Correct.
Okay. Just considering those, the characteristic, how they characterize different beliefs and the teaching methods, are you saying that these, her teaching methods and his teaching methods clash to such an extent that the age difference or the basis of age discrimination is shown by the clashing or by the different views, or?
Well, his view was that he wanted to team teach with a younger submissive person. I think that's very much age related. It's very subtle, but I think that is age related. The truth is that there's one of the findings that the judge makes that they couldn't team teach together. Didn't work out. They never did. Mr. Karai refused to team teach with my client, so that's clearly an erroneous finding, because the determination was made to not give her the correct assignment before she'd ever been in a classroom with Mr. Karaya. So it's clearly erroneous. She had taught 1 year, the year that the young guy left. She did teach band classes. There was no problem. She went on after they ousted her from Yale and taught band classes at Marijuana. She taught other band classes in Yale school. No problem. And this is one of his, it's very interesting to me that if you look at the Shot B. Gucci place, which is a case which is age discrimination case, I guess the main one that exists right now in Hawaii law, is when the same test was applied there, Ms. Shop claimed that there was age discrimination. The employer came back and said, no, you know, you're not doing your job, you're coming in late, you're not providing the documentation, you're not doing your job.
Excuse and this, Ms. Johnson, yes. So if the problem was there was a personality conflict or a difference in teaching method, or the fact that your client couldn't make the commitment in terms of time and effort for the after-school programs, would that have any relationship to age? I mean, would those reasons exist whether or not someone was older or younger than your client?
I think that those are perception that's personality traits, younger personality traits. The arbitration decided all of that's irrelevant. You can't do this. It doesn't make any difference whether the difference in teaching methods, whether you've had, one has more experience in band instruments or not, that under the contract, the most senior person gets the job assignment. And that's
well, like, the, yeah. the issue being arbitrated was whether the collective bargaining agreement had been violated.
That's correct. And they found, and the arbitrator found that it had.
So the question of age discrimination or retaliation on the basis of complaints filed alleging age discrimination were not at issue in the arbitration.
Really? Absolutely, then we're not. And my argument was that it's an issue preclusion, that the reason they're giving in the trial of my case for why they did what they did was a reason that had been found to be in violation of the bargaining agreement. And they'd already been told that this, you can't do this. I don't know that it's a false reason under Reeves versus Sanderson Plumbing, but it's certainly not a legitimate reason. How can you justify your actions based on actions determined to be a violation of your contract?
But under the HSTA contract, seniority doesn't relate to age necessarily.
No. I'm not saying that it does. No. All I'm saying is that the same arguments they gave as a reason to why they had done 1998, 99 to Ms. Stuckey not giving her the correct job assignment.
Retaliation claim, where do you measure from what event to what adverse action?
Okay. In 1998-99, Ms. Stuckey was given a job assignment that she disagreed with. She filed a grievance. They worked out a temporary plan for her to teach for the 98-99 year. She filed, realizing that part of the problems and excuses that were being given, that there was discrimination on the basis of age. She initiated her charge with the Hawaii Civil Rights Commission in November of 1998. She'd already was into the teaching year. Her attorney at that time had let Paul Brown, who was then the interim superintendent for the District of Maui, know that an age discrimination claim was going to be filed. So if you look back at the proposed findings of facts that I submitted to the court on the uncontroverted evidence that had come in during trial, beginning in August of 1998, Dr. Eisen escalated adverse actions against my client, and they run the whole gamut, and I'll just cite a few. Again, you can look at both of my opening brief at pages 15 through 18 and the proposed findings of fact, but they included such things as first of all, just the job assignment. Second, she was put in a team teaching situation. She wasn't given a key to the band room. About 4 days after the civil rights charge was served on the DOE, the principal notified my client that she would be subject to a 2-week observation, something unheard of. It was an evaluation that Joan Husted, who was qualified as an expert on the HSTA contract, was said in violation of the contract. Dr. Eisen continued a pattern of harassment, of going into Ms. Stuckey's room during class, belittling her in front of the kids, calling into her office sometimes 2 and 3 times a day to question her about various things. And you have to look at these proposed findings and all the evidence, all the sites are there, the record, the testimony, the documents that support this. These were all findings that were totally ignored by the trial court.
Ms. Johnston, then tracking the language of the statute,
right.
I take it then that your retaliation claim is that the defendants engaged in the adverse actions that you've just recited, or in the words of the statute, discriminated against your client by way of those adverse actions because she had filed an age discrimination complaint.
That's correct. It created a hostile work environment, very hostile, which under the Ray v. Henderson case, which is cited by the Hawaii court and Shefke.
So in other words, the retaliation was retaliation for having filed an age discrimination complaint.
Absolutely. And Ms. Stuckey was finally triggered into filing the separate charge for retaliation, which was filed in January of 2000 after the series of events that occurred beginning in about April of 1999, Ms. Stuckey was again told that she would be teaching, had to teach classes outside of her area of certification, whereas again the less senior teacher was given a full class, band line class. There was a letter, and I'd like to just in a little bit of detail go over this to show you what the real trigger was to the retaliation charge. Ms. Stuckey, we had already filed a complaint January of 1999, the complaint herein for the discrimination. And she was notified in May of 1999, Exhibit P106, by the principal that she would again be teaching 3 social study classes, 2 seventh grade music, 1 eighth grade music elective. She indicated to the interim district superintendent, defendant Paul Brown, that she did not want to teach outside of her area of certification. There followed the lights on. I wanted to reserve. I asked him to tell me 10 minutes. Let me talk for just a few more, but I would like to reserve at least 5 minutes for rebuttal. But this is very important. There's a letter sent out on June 25th by Mr. Brown telling Ms. Stuckey that if you only want to teach music, we can't force you to teach outside of your certification. We only got 3 music classes for you. Otherwise, you can go, if you don't want to teach half-time, we can send you to another school where you can teach full-time. And the reason we will do this, if you don't agree to this, we're going to staff reduce you. And staff reduce you is a technical term. That means that the least, if you don't have enough classes for a teacher, the teacher, the least seniority gets sent out to another school. I filed a motion for preliminary injunction at end of July 28th, 1999, to enjoin them from doing this, cutting her to halftime or shipping.
Now, Ms. Johnston, that was the event you claim was
that is the one that finally triggered her to file the charge. Right. But there
that
had
was,
been,
that's the
okay.
event.
Yeah.
That
okay.
You claim is there retaliation? Is that right?
No. It was from. There's a whole series of things. This,
in your application for cert, that's the one you identify.
That's the main one, but I think you'll see from my
when she was transferred to Maui Waena. Would she be able to come back?
No.
To
no. She was already in 1998-99 in a reserve position that had been created. When you're in a reserve position.
So she wasn't able to come back to EAL?
No.
Then would she be out of a job, or what would happen?
She would be a floater, and she'd have to go find another school. And who knows where it would have been? Might not even been on Maui. So very much an adverse impact on her, and something under the Burlington case would be likely to cause most reasonable people, you know, to suffer from that. If I could retain just a few 5 minutes, I can maybe finish up on my rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kimberly Tsumoto-Gedri, and I'm a Deputy Attorney General representing defendants' appellees. I respectfully urge this court to affirm the Circuit Court's correct findings, order, and judgment below for the following 3 reasons. First, the Circuit Court correctly applied the proper burden-shifting test adopted by this court in Schopp and Schefke and found that defendants have met their burden of establishing that they had a valid non-discriminatory and non-retaliatory reason for their actions. Plaintiff does not challenge the application of this correct legal standard on appeal. Second, this is a fact-dependent case, and there was sufficient evidence in the record, substantial evidence, for the Circuit Court to deny plaintiff's age discrimination and retaliation claims. The trial court's findings of fact and its application of these facts to the correct legal standard were not clearly erroneous. And third, plaintiff has produced no evidence that she was the best qualified individual for the second band teacher position. She merely claims entitlement to the position because of her seniority. Plaintiff Stuckey's claims of seniority have absolutely no nexus with and do not support her age discrimination or retaliation claims.
Counsel, there was a great deal of acrimony between Eisen, the principal, and Stuckey, and the kinds of problems that they were having. Can they be characterized as based upon age?
No.
Factor?
No, not at all. Might have been a personality conflict between Dr. Eisen and Plaintiff Stuckey, a conflict in terms of teaching methodology and attitude towards teen teaching, but there's nothing in the record that establishes that that was based on any sort of age discrimination. In fact, I do want to point out that Kaneshiro and Stuckey, they were both in the same age-protected group. And also, Dr. Eisen was actually older than both Plaintiff Stuckey and Kaneshiro. Dr. Eisen did not know Kaneshiro and Stuckey's ages when she made the teaching assignments.
You're not saying that just because people may be in the same relative to age group, that there cannot be age discrimination?
No, that's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that there's nothing in the record that would evidence that Dr. Eisen any motivation for her teaching assignments or her actions towards Plaintiff Stuckey was in any way motivated by any sort of age discrimination.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, I mean, for example, she went to Dr. Elijah and there was a diagnosis of, she doesn't really have mental problems. I mean, it's personality minuses, I guess. I mean, she was inflexible. She was rigid, and that type of thing is what he focused on. And the question is, does this come along with age?
No.
Can it be made a basis? If it did, can it be a basis of age discrimination? You know, you two, Ms. Kanashiro can get along with people. You cannot.
No, Dr. Elias Hoff, when he made his diagnosis, diagnosed Plaintiff Stuckey as having oppositional and compulsive traits, and these are entirely age-neutral traits, they're not age-related. Compulsive traits are manifested in rigidity, stubbornness, inflexibility. Oppositional traits are manifested in being uncooperative, and these are traits that are non-age-related. When Plaintiff Stuckey is 86 years old and Kanashiro is 80 years old, they will still have the same personality traits that they do now.
Well, what about teaching methods? Does the evidence indicate, the record indicate, what specific methods were utilized by Kuraya Kanashiro Stuckey, and is it related to an age group or?
No, I think that what the record shows is that Kanashiro and Kuraya were able to work together in a team teaching format. And Plaintiff Stuckey and Kuraya, who was a senior band teacher at Yale, were not able to work in this team teaching format because their attitude towards the band program differed. And because of this, Dr. Eisen felt that preserving the overall structure of the band program was very important, and part of that was to preserve the team teaching approach that was so successful, and placing Kanashiro, who Dr. Eisen also felt to have a background and experience, all of her training being in teaching band specifically, that she was the better qualified person for that position, and that had nothing to do with age.
What about Ms. Johnston's argument that the qualities or traits that Kuraya wanted in a teen teacher were characteristic of a younger person, and hence the age discrimination based on perception?
Well, I think what Plaintiff Stuckey argues is that Kanashiro was submissive, and there's nothing in the record that evidences that Kanashiro was submissive. She was characterized as being able to get along with Kuraya and being a team player, but that in itself has nothing, that is age neutral, it has nothing to do, her ability to team teach with Kuraya and to be part of that band program has nothing to do with age.
Is there anything in the record, any testimony in the record, reflecting the equivalence in Kariah's mind or anyone else's between the traits or characteristics that he wanted to see in the teacher that he taught with and age?
No. That there is not. There's nothing that, as I pointed out, the record shows that Kanashiro was a team player, and that Plaintiff Stuckey was not willing to, that her attitudes towards the band program differed. But there's nothing in the record that evidences a nexus between Kaneshiro's characteristics and age.
Counsel, was there anything in the findings about Dr. Eliashoff's examination or diagnosis?
No, there were not.
Was that evidence submitted at trial?
Yes, Dr. Eliashoff testified at trial.
And that was not, that kind of information, was that available to the principal at the time she made these decisions, or Mr. Brown when he made these decisions?
You mean Dr. Elias's
diagnosis? His examination,
well,
his opinion.
He examined Plaintiff Stuckey in May 2000, so I believe that that would be after
So all this evaluation about what her personality might have been like was not, or did not enter into the decisions made by your clients, as far as Dr. Eliashoff's evaluation is concerned.
No, not Dr. Eliashoff's evaluation directly.
The trial court found that plaintiff did establish a prima facie case
of discrimination.
Yes.
Yes.
You folks did not cross appeal from that.
No, we did not, because what the trial court found was that even though plaintiff had met her burden of establishing a prima facie case of discrimination, defendants clearly had a non-discriminatory reason for their action.
So you don't disagree with the court that there was a prima facie case of discrimination established?
We did not appeal from that.
So you do not disagree?
We agree that that's what the trial court found.
As far as retaliation is concerned, the trial court made one finding of fact.
Yes.
Is that adequate on this record?
Yes, it is. The trial court made a finding on the relevant fact in terms of Plaintiff Stuckey's retaliation claim, which was that defendants had a non-retaliatory reason for their actions. And the record contains substantial, sufficient evidence to support that finding.
What about Burlington? The court didn't, well, Burlington, I guess, didn't come out during the trial, is that correct?
Right.
So the test in Burlington was not applied by the court?
It was not, but Burlington is inapplicable. And in Burlington, the U.S. Supreme Court clarified whether an adverse action must be employment or workplace related and the scope of that harm. It more clearly defined what constituted an adverse retaliation action for purposes of establishing a prima facie case of retaliation.
Well, and for your purposes, does it matter whether Burlington is applicable or not? I mean, is there anything in the Burlington analysis that hurts you?
I don't believe there is, because whether or not plaintiff was able to establish a prima facie case of retaliation, what the circuit court found is that defendants had met their burden of establishing a non-retaliatory reason for their actions.
In other words, you're not disputing a finding that X constituted an adverse action.
No, we're saying that the trial court's finding that defendants had a non-retaliatory reason for their actions, that is correct, and that's fully supported by the evidence in the record.
I guess that's what I'm exploring. As I understand it, the significance of Burlington for present purposes is that it clarifies what may constitute an adverse action. And you heard Ms. Johnston enumerate what she regarded as adverse actions. Assuming the truth assuming the fact that the actions occurred, do you dispute that any of them are adverse?
For purposes of establishing a prima facie case?
Correct.
The trial court did not make that finding, and so I would not agree that what defendants did would even rise to the level of establishing evidence to constitute a prima facie case of retaliation.
What's your understanding of the prima facie case that the court found the plaintiff had made out?
I'm sorry?
How would you characterize the prima facie case that the court found that the plaintiff had established?
In terms of retaliation?
In terms of retaliation.
It's really not clear from the circuit court's finding whether the circuit court did find that whether there was a prima facie case of retaliation, whether a plaintiff had even been able to meet that burden. However, our point is that
is it your understanding that the circuit court found a prima facie case of age discrimination?
Yes, it is.
But not necessarily a prima facie case of retaliation?
Yes, not necessarily of retaliation, but the trial court's findings were proper because the trial court found that defendants, whether or not plaintiff had established a prima facie case of retaliation, had met our burden of establishing non-retaliatory reasons for our actions, and that finding is sufficient and is fully supported by the evidence in the record.
I take it that finding is contained in finding 31?
Yes, it is.
The conduct that followed the filing of the age discrimination complaints was not motivated by the filing of the complaint or complaints themselves.
Right, yes.
Well, Ms. Johnston takes issue with that finding, and she says that the court relied on the acts regarding discrimination itself. And so the court was wrong under Burlington, because Burlington says, in looking at a retaliatory act, you do not consider the acts that underlie the discrimination complaint. How do you respond to that?
I think that plaintiffs' retaliation claims only pertain to those claims that arose after she had filed her Hawaii Civil Rights Commission complaint in November 98. And
okay.
I think
so. If that's true, then can you construe that finding as relying on evidence that involved a discrimination complaint?
No.
As opposed to acts that took place after the complaint was filed?
No, I think that the main retaliatory act that plaintiff alleges in both her opening brief and her cert application is plaintiff's transfer from Iao School to Maui Waena School in the fall of 99. And there's substantial evidence in the record to show that defendants had non-retaliatory reasons for making this transfer. And I need to point out that plaintiff made the ultimate choice to transfer to Maui Waena School. And that was because in the fall of 99, there were only enough interested students to create three vocal music classes. Superintendent Brown understood that plaintiff was not willing to teach classes outside of her certification, that this was a subject of a separate
theater. But the fact showed that when she was transferred to, or she had the option of going half-time.
Right? Yes, she did.
Which is not a great option, I guess, or of transferring out of school to another school.
Right.
And that, I thought it said that the other teacher would teach six classes of music.
Kaneshiro was assigned to teach six band classes,
okay.
And The reason why Dr. Eisen made those teaching assignments was because she, in her subjective perception,
so in fact, there was enough students to constitute six band class.
Yes, there were enough students because...
And if Ms. Conashur didn't do that, Ms. Stuckey would be doing that.
Perhaps, but the
so
fact...
Who else was there to do it?
Mr. Kuraya. He was a primary band teacher.
Well, it's teaching, so you have two people doing it?
Yes.
So Kuraya would be there regardless of whether or Stuckey were teaching.
Yes, Kuraya was a primary band teacher, but the reason why Dr. Eisen placed Kaneshiro in the band position and Stuckey in the vocal music classes is because of Dr. Eisen's subjective perception as to Kaneshiro and Plaintiff Stuckey's respective qualifications, their background in music. Kaneshiro's having a band background, whereas Plaintiff Stuckey had a background in vocal music, and as well as Dr. Eisen's subjective perception of their attitude towards teen teaching.
And at least in summary fashion, isn't that exactly what the circuit court found in finding 31?
Yes. Well, it is. I mean, the circuit court found was all of those reasons, the non-retaliatory reasons, supported his finding that defendants' actions were not motivated by any retaliatory motive.
Would a reasonable person be able to draw the conclusion that those facts would amount to a retaliatory motive?
The facts that are in the record?
Yes. I mean, she files the complaint. Then after the complaint, she gets given the choice of getting out of the school or going half-time.
I don't believe, on the basis of the record, I don't believe that finding can be made.
You can't look into people's minds, but looking at the sequence of events, could a reasonable person draw a conclusion that way?
Based on the facts that are in the record, I don't believe that a reasonable person necessarily could. However, I also want to point out that the circuit court, as a fact finder, stated that it had carefully considered the evidence and it observed the witnesses. And as the U.S. Supreme Court said in Reeves versus Sanderson, the fact finder has discretion to make credibility determinations, weigh the evidence, and draw legitimate inferences from the facts. And it from the record, it supports that the circuit court, as fact finder, that the circuit court's findings were not clearly erroneous, that there is substantial evidence in the record to support his findings. If your honors have no further questions for me, I respectfully...
I had one other question, sorry.
Yes.
The superintendent, I think her name was Murakami, ordered that Ms. Stuckey be given the second band line.
Yes.
This happened before everything else. But the school didn't follow the direction of Ms. Murakami. Why is that?
Well, after Superintendent Murakami had decided that on the basis of the HSTA contracts, Plaintiff Stuckey was entitled to the second band line. In the 98-99 school year, Superintendent Brown and Personnel Officer Peter Daniels created a reserve position especially for Plaintiff Stuckey and believed that they had obtained her consent to, or her agreement to be willing to teach in this reserve position. It was a position at Yao Intermediate School in which she would be assigned 5 music classes and 1 drama class. And Superintendent Brown testified that he felt that Plaintiff Stuckey's agreement to teach in this position superseded...
That resulted in the grievance being filed under the HSTA contract.
Her non-placement, yes.
And the creation of this reserve position, did that coincide with hiring Ms. Kaneshiro?
No, Ms. Kaneshiro...
Or Mr. Schaefer?
Mr. Schaefer taught, I believe it was in the early 90s at Yale School. He left Yale School because he was offered a position, a band position at another school. Ms. Kaneshiro began teaching in spring of 95. So that was prior to Ms. Stuckey's placement in the reserve position.
But was Ms. Kaneshiro shifted into the music line after this reserve position was created?
I believe that she was teaching band classes with Mr. Karaya. That she, when Plaintiff Stuckey was placed in the reserve position to teach vocal music classes, as was her specialty, Ms. Kaneshiro was placed in the second band line position to teach, to team teach with Mr. Kaneshiro, with Mr. Karaya.
So the answer is yes.
My answer was that is the way it ended up at the school.
So you had three people teaching music when previously there were two.
I believe that before...
And apparently you didn't need three because you, the school transferred Ms. Stuckey out of the school and felt that Ms. Kaneshiro and Mr. Karaya were sufficient.
Well, I need to point out that in the fall of 98, when this reserve position was created for Plaintiff Stuckey, it was still Dr. Eisen's perception that Plaintiff Stuckey was qualified to teach vocal music classes. And at that time, there were only enough students who had signed up for vocal music to form three classes for her to teach. And therefore, there were three teachers at the school, and it was within Dr. Eisen's authority to make the actual teaching assignments, and she did so based on what she felt, her subjective perceptions of what she felt the teachers' qualifications and their attitude towards teaching, team teaching were. If your honors have no further questions, we respectfully urge this court to affirm the order and judgment entered below. Thank you.
In response to the question as far as the perception of what Mr. Karaya wanted to see in a team teaching, and the proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law referred, cited to the testimony he gave on July 24th, pages 51, where he said he wanted that in team teaching, the lead teacher, there's one lead teacher and the second teacher is more of a junior position. And also in that same July 24th, 2003 transcript at pages 170 to 171, he says that the younger teacher is submissive to the senior teacher. And then
he used the word younger.
Excuse me. I don't know that he used the word younger. That's the way I phrase it. But he means the second teacher. The second teacher is submissive to the senior teacher. I'd have to go back and look at the construct.
My question, I think, was whether there is any testimony in the record. Okay. Presumably Karaya, to the effect that the qualities that he wanted to see were qualities that would be, in his mind, reflective of a younger person.
Okay. I can't say by looking at this whether those are my words, but what I can say is that his testimony was that in team teaching, one teacher is the lead teacher, and the second teacher is in more of a junior position, and that's a quote, and that's a page.
Junior position can be filled by an older person,
right?
Can it not?
Okay. Yes, it could. Okay,
And often is.
Okay, but he also went on to testify that the junior teacher needs to be submissive to the senior teacher, which is again a pretty much an age-related characteristic. Ms. Kaneshiro testifies...
Well, that goes back to my question. That's your inference.
Yes.
But is there any testimony in the record that it was someone else's inference? In other words, is there any evidence in the record that Kariya wanted a younger person?
No, I, to be very honest, I can't tell you by looking at this. All I can say is he did talk in terms of submissiveness, juniorness. I don't know that I can't tell you that he said the word younger. I'd have to go back and look at the record to be correct on that. I can tell you that Ms. Kaneshiro testified on August 5th, 2003 at page 10 that when she was hired, it was to be an assistant in the spring of 95, to be an assistant to Defendant Kariya.
Ms. Johnston, you know, the question of retaliation, I think, is a significant one in this case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, there's one finding on retaliation in 31.
That's correct.
You make the argument that finding potentially violates Burlington in the sense that finding appears to rely on the facts relating to the discrimination complaint.
That's
and Burlington says on a retaliatory claim, you don't do that.
That's correct. What's
your position on that?
My position is that first of all, it's unclear, it's ambiguous the way it's worded, but what the finding says is the conduct that followed the filing of the age discrimination complaints, plural, was not motivated by any age-related factors.
Nor were they motivated by the filing of the complaints themselves.
Okay.
The statute defines the retaliation that you're alleging as adverse action taken because the person has filed a complaint, in this case an age discrimination complaint. The circuit court is finding that nothing that any of the defendants did post filing of the complaints was motivated by the filing of the complaints. Isn't that responsive to the claim for relief set out in the statute?
I think it totally ignores the law.
It may ignore evidence.
Okay.
But is it responsive to the elements of the claim for relief enumerated in the statute?
First of all, whether or not there's a discriminatory motive based on the characteristic is not a factor in a retaliation claim. It doesn't have to be there, and that was the law at the time, and the judge even decides in his conclusions.
The adverse actions must statutorily be taken because a complaint,
okay,
in this case an age discrimination complaint, has been filed.
Okay. The law says that the actions taken subsequent to the filing of a complaint, in and of themselves, by the timing of them and the nature of them, can be construed to be retaliatory in nature. I mean, no employer is going to come up and say, "Yeah, I'm discriminating against you on the basis of age, and now you filed the complaint. I'm going to really juice it up and retaliate against you." I mean, that's where these cases are very difficult cases because it's very subtle.
I think the statute says more than filing of a complaint. It says opposing any practice or assisting in any proceeding also.
That's correct?
Correct. So where do you measure your complaint from? I mean, which is it? You mentioned the filing of the claim in the Civil Rights Commission. There was also the filing of the complaint in the court. So
well,
where do you measure from?
I measure it in this case law. I can't cite the court that from the moment they were put on notice by Ms. Stuckey's prior attorney in August of 98 that she was going to file an age discrimination claim, that they knew what was coming. She didn't file it till November. If you look at the findings of fact and conclusions of law that don't appear in these findings of all the actions that were taken, the inference is very clear that these were taken subsequent to her filing of that charge with the Civil Rights Commission. She waited, trying to tough it out, hoping things would get better until the final removal of her from Yale School.
Well, I asked you early on in your argument whether your retaliation claim for statutory purposes was that the defendants discriminated against Ms. Stuckey because she had filed age discrimination complaints, and you said yes. That is your claim.
That's my claim, yeah.
So if the sole purpose on the retaliation finding by the court was to indicate that no retaliatory action was taken after the filing of the complaint, why would the court also refer to conduct not motivated by any age-related factors? What would be the purpose of that?
I think what that's in response to is my argument that under Reeves versus Sanderson Plumbing, that in the absence of a valid reason being offered by the employer, that discrimination can be found.
What about Burlington? You argued Burlington in your application.
I did argue Burlington.
As the reason for 31 being okay. In error.
My argument on Burlington was, I brought it to the attention of the intermediate court, and they said, in office, it doesn't apply. It's not a Hawaii case. It's not Hawaii law, which contradicts to the decisions in the Furukawa case and all of them saying, yeah, we can look to it. And I thought, I was very concerned about that would be a comment they would make.
But what in finding 31 is in dissonance with Burlington?
The statement that the court is satisfied that regardless of the timing of the age discrimination complaints, that the conduct that followed the filing of the age discrimination complaints was not motivated by age. There seems to be an implication there, and maybe it's
nor by the filing of the complaints.
I know, but he's done both. The trial judge did both. There's no age.
Your point was he relied on the discrimination evidence.
I think in part, and it's not clear.
That's, in part, at least, because part. Otherwise, why mention it?
That's true, and that's you've got to read it that way. I think. Let me just say one final thing. I know my light is on, but...
Well, can you expound any more on 31 in Burlington?
No, I think I pretty much stated what it is, but I just want to repeat that the reason is you come up with any excuse that's not doesn't seem to be retaliatory or age-based, and it's okay, then they're off the hook. But the reason they came up with had already been determined to not be a valid reason. And the final...
It had been determined to be a breach of the contract.
Right, that they couldn't do what they did. So the lower court is saying it's a valid reason, but it's also been ruled to be, a breach of the contract. So what does that do for public policy? You use a state of employer can do anything you want to in breach of the contract, and it's okay. And that seems to be
the implication. I don't find the word valid in finding 31. I don't read finding 31 as approving the defendant's post complaint conduct. It simply finds that the post complaint conduct and all of it, including the adverse actions that you enumerated, were not motivated by the filing of the complaints.
I think it's clearly, to extend the conclusion of law, I think it's wrong, and extend it's a finding of fact, I think it's erroneous. I just would like to add one thing that after Ms. Stuckey was removed, she was removed from her transfer to Maui, Waiana, where they did not need a music teacher. The reason was not being staff reduced, it was for the good of the district, and I just want to point this out. When Ms. Stuckey asked Mr. Brown what was for the good of the district, now we've gone from being good for the band program to being for the good of the district. And the uncontroverted evidence that his response was that it would, that one, she was not qualified to teach the band, two, to resolve the 26 outstanding grievances, and three, to avoid acrimony. They could get her out of Yale school. She couldn't come back because she's in a reserve position. The complaints would disappear. I mean, it's very, very, very retaliatory. And this was in her charge filed contemporaneously, uncontroverted at the time of trial. She testified to that. I thank you, Honors, very much. I'm concern that when we were in the process of this case, that the decision in Kimmel versus the Florida Board of Governors came down, which made the federal Age Discrimination Employment Act unavailable to state employees against the state, leaving it only in the hands of the State Fair Employment Act. There's a huge number of people that are employed by the state that have only the act before you, the state law, and we don't have much law on it. And I'm really hopeful that this court will help us to develop the laws so state can know, and the plaintiffs can know, and the practitioners can know what the law is for these kinds of claims. They're very difficult claims, and that would certainly be appreciated. And again, thank you for giving us a chance to have our day in court with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
The court will take this matter under advisement.
I will speak first. You know what is that adjourned?